right. Welcome back. It's so good to be back right here at TSN 690. This is your favorite radio show, The Kaufman Show. I'm Dave. That's Jay right across from me, and we are ready to rock and roll.
It's been a while.
It's been too long. I'm not you. I just, it's funny. I look at you. I keep
showing up on Monday and nobody's answering.
I saw you outside, Jay. And honestly, I didn't recognize you because you weren't wearing a baseball cap.
That's right.
I kind of did a double take.
Yeah. I got rent to pay, my friend. So I won't be in very long, but I showed up anyway to at least help you through the first hour of the show.
Thank you. And we'll have a good time. We're going to speak with Rusty Staub in just a couple of minutes. Legendary Montreal Expo Rusty Staub will be on the Kaufman Show. Jay and I are really excited for that.
I'm nervous.
I'm a little nervous, too. Looking forward to talking about the days of the Montreal Expos that I don't know, the days that I don't remember. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We've got a great show lined up. Torben Rolfson will be with us, our resident comedian all the way from Vancouver. I know it's just for laughs, but we still go all the way out to the 604 to get our comedy.
Yeah.
because Torben's great. He's part of the team now. And Wendy Thurm will be with us as well, Hanging Sliders on Twitter. Great baseball writer to discuss the Biogenesis scandal. Mo Khan will join us a little later. But our first guest is on the line and ready to go. He was the first star of the Montreal Expos. And, you know, it only was in town for 3 years off that first run. Came back again in 79, but it took 3 years. That was it. And Rusty Staub will forever be one of the faces of the franchise, and he joins us tonight. Number 10, Rusty Staub, welcome to the Kaufman Show, sir. How are you?
All right, Dave. Good to be here.
It's great to have you here, and we're looking forward to a little bit of a trip down memory lane right now. I want to ask you, what were those heady days like at the start? You had had a brief, I guess you'd played a year for Houston. You were one of the original draft picks of the Colt 45s, and then played a bit in Houston, and then came to Montreal in a trade that almost didn't happen. But what was it like, the excitement in the city? Because I'll tell you, for some of us, we just can't picture it.
Well, I actually was I signed before the free agent draft started. I signed in 61. I think it started in 62 or 3. And I played 6 years in Houston before I came to Montreal. Obviously, I had two great things, okay? They had Charles Bronson as the owner. Gene Mark is the manager, and they were two magnificent people, both in their own way. Charles treated everybody just magnificently. The team was first class all the way. Mark was a little tough, but great. He was the smartest person I ever met in baseball.
Gene Mark.
Yep, so to have those two people kind of leading us, It was an amazing thing to see the excitement there was for baseball to come up there. I mean, I can remember going to one of the big squares, and it was something in the Ville.
I right? was Placeville Marie.
Placeville Marie, there it is. And my God, I was just totally blown away by how many people came. It was kind of cold.
Yeah, we don't care about that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was April in Montreal. It could be anything.
Yeah.
So I have to say that the reception we received and the way baseball was accepted there, it actually was more like an instead of just being a ball game, it was more like an event, and it was just great.
And
you never knew what was going to be happening in the stands.
And I'm guessing that this was not something that you expected. What was your knowledge of Montreal before being traded to the team?
Very little. You know, I mean, I never ever been north of the border. I had no knowledge at all, really.
You're from New Orleans, right?
Born and raised.
Did you see any similarities between the two cities? I mean, beyond just the fact that there's French signs and French street names in New Orleans.
New Orleans has a few people that speak, you know, kind of a broken, more Cajun French than Canadian and or Parisian French, which all seem to have their own lingo. And I will say that I had taken French grammar 1 year at Jesuit High School in school, which actually helped me a little, because when I realized that I could not speak to a young child or, you know, be able to do anything on television, I started, you know, after the season was over the first year, I went to one of the language schools and I took 25 hour and a half lessons and, you know, they wanted to tell me how to put the window was open and the plate is on the top, on the table. I'm telling them, no, that's not what I need to know. Talk about baseball terms. I need to talk about ordering in a restaurant and having somewhat of a small conversation with all the media, you know, where I could say words and respond to them, you know, especially the ones that were on television where you could do something.
You were known as the only player at the time to take that initiative, and I think it was, I mean, I don't think, I know that it was one of the things that endeared you to the fan base in the province of Quebec and really across the country. Did other players try to do that as well, or was it really just you?
Well, I mean, after I left, I mean, I know Gary Carter tried a few things, and, you know, I don't know how in-depth anybody went into it. Obviously, Bill Stoneman, who married a young lady from Montreal, he probably spoke French better than anybody because he stayed on and was the general manager there. He had to speak French. He had to pick it up.
He might have been the only one if he did. I don't remember him speaking much French to the press, but, you know, going through the later years.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I knew he was married to a French-Canadian lady, and my knowledge, they're still together.
Well, or he didn't learn, and that's why he got along so well with the in-laws.
So all I know was it was just an exciting city to be in. I loved it.
And of course, you know, you talk about this this day at Placeville Marie, and you know, I'll tell you, Rusty, I'm young. My memories of the Expos were started in the '80s, and really started after Gary Carter was traded. But I've seen that black and white video of the that opening party, if you want to call it, and there was a parade and the fans, I think every player was announced, and it looked like a mob.
Yeah.
You guys looked like it looked like the Beatles. It looked like Beatlemania, and
it was wonderful. It sure got our attention, you know, because we had no idea what to expect. You know, we had all been together in spring training. It was hot. We were going up to the Ville Montréal, and it was not hot.
Earlier,
but we got lucky opening day. The first 2 days, it wasn't too cold.
Well, opening day was, I mean, just from looking at the pictures, it looked like it was a gorgeous day. And of course,
yeah.
Brought home the victory
the
as well.
Cardinals and, well, our first games were in New York against the Mets.
Right.
When we came home, we opened against the Cardinals.
That was the Dan McGinn home run, right? Or was that the game one in New
that
York?
That was the first game. Dan McGinn hit the first home run.
Okay.
In the history of the franchise. I think that day, three of us hit home runs. Dan McGinn, myself, and I'm just cannot remember who the other person is right now, but I know there was at least three of us hit home runs in that opening game. But Dan McGinn, of all people, a relief pitcher, hit the first.
Which is wonderful. There was conversation earlier on the afternoon show today about trades that have hurt. And our afternoon show host, Mitch Melnick, mentioned you being traded, the Jorgensen-Foley-Singleton trade, as one of the ones that hurt him when he was young. And I'm wondering from your side how that felt after 3 years of really building yourself up to being a national icon in this country, for it to be gone like that. How did that feel?
Well, the truth is, it's the only time in my entire career where they kind of caught me unawares. Every other time, I knew something was going to have to happen, or I was very vulnerable to be moved. That one actually caught me very unawares. I have to say, I was surprised. You know, whenever you're doing as much as I was doing, you know, we had 150,000 children in that Young Expos Club. You know, I was traveling all over the country for the Bank of Montreal to go, you know, continue that movement of bringing baseball to everybody in the country because we were the only team then. I have to say that, yes, it hurt me. When they told me it hurt me, I realized I was going to be going to a ball club that could, you know, could fight for a championship. They had a great pitching staff. I mean, they had won the whole thing in 1969. So, I mean, I knew all the you know, playing in New York and what that could mean to any player who was successful, which by the grace of God, it turned out to be that my career was successful there. And I have to admit it hurt me when I found out. Yes.
It also started a love affair with the city of New York, a city that embraced you. And I mean, you're not only an iconic Expo, but you're also known as one of the great Mets of all time.
Well, you know, when I went there, I told them, I said, you know, I realized what a great opportunity this is for me, but I told them the truth. I said I was caught unawares. I was not. I had no idea this was happening. And, you know, I was very involved in a lot of things up there. I said, don't get me wrong. I'm going to change my loyalties in my life. But, you know, the fact that I'm not jumping and screaming about coming to New York and having a chance to play for this ball club, don't misinterpret my quietness right now. I said, because really, it's like I was stunned. I said, I will make this adjustment, and I will be a good player here, and I am sure if I play well, the fans will respond.
We're in conversation with Montreal Expos legend Rusty Staub on The Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman and Jay Farrar.
Rusty, as upsetting as it was for you to have left the Expos in the early 70s, I guess there was a little bit of redemption when you came back in 1979. I also, you did go back to the Mets afterwards. I remember, I'm a little bit older than Dave, and you got, of course, that famous standing ovation in 1979 upon your return. Later on, when you were playing with the Mets, I remember going to the games, and you were still getting standing ovations every time you would come back with the Mets.
Oh, cool.
And I remember seeing you I must have been about seven, eight years old. And I remember, why are they clapping for a Mets player? I asked my father. I said, that's because that's Le Grand Orange, he said. So it must have
been. You know, that name still means the world to me.
Yeah.
It's God bless his soul. Teddy Blackman is the guy that called me Le Grand Orange. He was the first media guy he wrote it in the paper. Hmm. We had a big, I think it was after we had this long losing streak, and I had a great day against the Dodgers and caught this ball at the end of the game, almost impaled myself on the fence in Dodger Stadium. We won, and I'm pretty sure it was the day after that he wrote Le Grand Orange something or other in the headline. So really, it was Ted Blackman that gave me the nickname.
And did it stick in New York as well, or did they go back to just calling you by the nickname that you already had?
Nope, it's just, that's been it.
That's great. One thing I wanted to discuss with you, you know, we're wrapping up right now with Rusty Staub on The Kaufman Show, and going back to New York, you've probably done more for that city than any other athlete through your Fireman Fund. And I know that you've raised hundreds of millions of dollars for, is it both police and firemen, or is it just firemen?
It's the New York Police and Fire Widows and Children's Benefit Fund.
And
it's a long title.
Well, and I won't shorten it with an acronym.
And we take the policemen, the firemen, the emergency service people under the umbrella of the fire department, and the port authority under the umbrella of the police department.
What made you start this?
Well, the truth is, I was always involved. I had an uncle who died in the line of duty in New Orleans, Louisiana, and I always had an affinity with police officers because we met so many, you know, as youngsters. And one day I was in my restaurant in New York, and this article came out where a police officer had been killed in the line of duty. He left a wife and three kids. The oldest was five. And it just hit me, you know, that maybe I should get up off my ass and go do something. And I did.
You did. And the face of that, of the organization, must have changed drastically after 9/11.
Well, you know, we had about 350 families that were involved in the organization the first, you know, like 12 years. And maybe even a little longer. But we have 9/11. There were 402 people who were badged who died in the building. What is it, 346 firemen, and, you know, there were some single officers who had no widows or children. You know, our group takes care of the widows and kids. We give a death benefit to the families, but, you know, we were there to help the families after these guys were gone. In fact, that day we lost two ladies. We lost an emergency service lady and a police lady.
She was, I knew her husband. Her husband was a police officer. They, you know, it was, I've seen him at some of our events. You know, well, geez, we just had our 29th picnic, okay, for these families once a year. So the next dinner is going to be our 28th. It's amazing. It's just, by the grace of God, people in New York realize that, you know, there is a debt service to these families. You know, they're making the ultimate sacrifice. This is not something that's, I mean, there's so many wonderful charities, but very few of them, somebody is dying so that your life is better. You got to at least have the responsibility to try to help their families.
I think this is the definition of role model for all of you that are listening. You know, you finished your career shy of, not far, but shy of 3,000 hits. You had an incredible on-base percentage. I know that on your website, it actually says Rusty Staub was not a great player, but you were a great teammate. And
you know, I don't even know what's on that website. I have nothing to do with it.
I think you just found out there, Rusty.
Yeah, time to fire your web designer.
I guess I'm not speaking very highly about myself.
Well, I think
you'll have to tell me more about what's on my website.
I think it's a testament to how humble you are, actually, to think that the one of the greats in our franchise history doesn't consider himself, or maybe he does. Maybe your web designer again. Maybe you need to have a conversation with somebody. But
that's funny, I swear. You know, I'm not.
I'm sorry.
I have a Twitter and Facebook and all these other things. That's not part of my game plan right now.
Oh,
you know, I think it's great for other people. I love it.
Well, I'll tell you, there's
a lot of
nice things being said about you on Twitter right now, Rusty. And I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us tonight. It was a real honor.
Guys, I loved it up there. You know that.
Good. We'll hopefully be in touch down the road. Thank you again for your time, sir.
All right, guys.
Rusty Staub, Le Grand Orange, on The Kauffman Show. You're listening to The Kauffman Show on TSN 690. We'll be back. We are back. It's the Kauffman Show. I'm out of breath.
You okay? You're running around there. You're making me nervous.
Don't be.
Stop moving so quickly.
Nothing to be nervous about. We're coming in on the Ty Cats Are Humming by R. Kells, released last year as the official song of the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Mm-hmm.
Jay, the Ty Cats announced today that the new Hamilton Stadium, somebody bought the buying rights. You want to guess who? I'll bet you a double-double you don't know.
Tim Hortons.
Oh, I guess I gave it away, huh?
Well, there you go. So the stadium's going to be called Tim Horton Stadium?
Yeah. Can we come up with a good like nickname for that?
Timmy's Stadium?
Meet you at the donut?
The donut. That's funny. That's going to happen. That's really going to happen. Yeah, you called it.
Yeah. It'll be
the donut in no time.
They might call it the crueler.
How come we don't call the Bell Center the phone booth?
I've heard Jack Todd call it that.
Really?
Yeah.
Because he used to call...
Oh, the MCI Center in Washington was the phone booth, wasn't it?
Oh, okay. And the Molson Center was called the Keg.
The Keg, that's right.
Okay.
Or maybe that's what I'm thinking of with
it. It didn't really catch
Todd.
On.
Hmm.
All right. Tim Hortons Stadium.
Look, I'm all about trying to, hide the corporate side of things and come up with other nicknames. I think that's way better.
Yes.
But the donut, I guess, the double-double. Call it the double-double.
It'll be a place where it's acceptable to just steal people's coffee from each other while you're walking by on the sidewalk.
I wonder if they still have the lawn parking.
Lawn parking?
Yeah, that's the whole... I mean, it's mentioned even in the song, right? I heard for $10 you can park on the lawn. All the houses that were next to Ivor Wynne Stadium.
Okay.
Which, coincidentally, was nicknamed Ivor Lewis Stadium.
Okay. Just don't clog up the drive-thru.
When I went down to Ivor Wynne Stadium last year to see the Hip, we parked on the lawn.
Yeah.
Paid $10, parked on the lawn next to the stadium. It was great.
That's nice.
It was pretty cool. For all of you listening in Ottawa tonight, have fun at the Hip. I wasn't on Thursday nights. I would be there with you. You going to any shows soon? You going to Heavy MTL?
No, there's nobody that I like there.
You're kidding me.
No, well, I like Megadeth, but I've seen them too often, and I just...
How often is too often?
There are too many slimy, over-tanned people with tank tops on that are rubbing up against you, and
that's
I just...
That's Oshiega, dude.
No, Heavy MTL's worse. Now they have, like, pierced noses and mohawks, which I'm cool with. It's fine. Just don't touch me. That's the only problem.
Wow, judging me.
This is how I dress to go to Heavy MTL in my nice shirt. And I don't want anybody full of mud and grease and touching me. And
you were there last year, right, for Suicidal Tendencies?
Smelling like patchouli? Yes, I was there for Suicidal Tendencies. It was well worth it.
Smelling like patchouli?
Whatever,
Is that like a derogatory pothead comment? Is that where we're going with this?
What do white people smell like? I don't know.
I don't know.
Okay.
Hugo Boss something. Axe. White people smell like Axe body spray. That's what they smell like.
They smell like Axe body. Okay.
Eric, do you want to weigh in, or would it be racist if you said what white people smell like?
Yeah, I'm not going to touch this.
No, it's not going anywhere near that.
I don't know if you guys saw the news, but Derek Jeter came back today. Remember that horrible injury he suffered in the playoffs?
Yeah.
He lying on the ground with his ankle basically split in half, it looked like.
Got a hit on the first pitch.
That's the end of Derek Jeter's career. Got a hit on the first pitch today, came back. I believe that was his 3,305th career hit. Left the game.
Oh, no.
And will be having an MRI on his quad.
Yeah, okay.
Tightness in his quad. So,
Do we have a Doug Gilmore scenario here?
What do you mean? He's going to start shilling for an alarm company?
No, silly Dave. After Doug Gilmore, he came back to Toronto. In his first game, he got injured.
That's right, and he was done. That's right.
And he was done, and we never saw him
again.
Oh,
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe it's going to be that kind of a scenario for Derek Jeter.
Is it weird that my lasting memory of Doug Gilmore is in that 8-0 loss to the Hurricanes when he slammed the glass?
Best thing I ever saw in my life.
I loved it.
I'm like, oh, good, somebody cares. That's awesome.
I sat in a room in London, Ontario. I was at university and summer school at the time, and sat there with I lived in a house with 8 guys, which is, for all you kids heading off to university, if you want to be productive,
8 guys.
Don't do that.
All another Heavy MTL scenario. Just a bunch of sweaty white guys rubbing up against each other.
Smelling like patchouli.
That's beautiful.
You want to live with 8 girls? Now that's an idea.
Yeah.
But 8 guys, man, oh man, that was dumb. Top it off, they were all Leaf fans.
Oh, that's, yeah.
And this was 10 years ago. This was back when the Leafs were Sundin.
Yeah.
Decent. And
yes.
Bob Cole was loving them.
Yes.
And Harry Neal was sitting beside him.
Yes.
Loving him.
Yes.
And it was
tough. Love.
It was tough to sit there and try and constantly remind them that the Habs had a better history and were a better, look at the last 10 years and it's more of the same. But I thank God that I don't have to sit there watching Habs games with 7 Leafs fans anymore. That was tough.
It must have been cool if Dougie Gilmore was on the team, though.
They respected us.
Okay.
I think because Dougie was there and if you're a certain age, if you were a kid growing up and experiencing the 92-93 hockey season, even if you're from Montreal, I think you love Doug Gilmore. And Gilmore, for me, I mean, it took getting him on our team for us to really understand what he meant to a team.
Mm.
But, you know, those are the guys that you hate, but you would love if they played for you.
Right.
Not at all in the same league, but for a few years, he had that same feeling. Matthew Barnaby.
Yes.
Guy that you knew was the biggest pain in the ass, but if he was on your team...
You would love him.
You were set.
Yeah.
You were set.
It's easy to change allegiances once the guy starts wearing your sweater.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it is. Oh, this is interesting. Just coming off the wire right now. We don't normally do this in the middle of the show, but the NHLPA and NHL have teamed up. What? They've teamed up?
Come on.
This obviously isn't the fall of 2012 to donate $100,000 to Alberta flood relief.
Oh, good for them.
I hope they follow suit with Lac-Mégantique as well. But
good.
This is very cool. It's something that struck me from all the coverage of this terrible tragedy in Lac-Mégantique is numerous people being interviewed, and you'll see like a Habs flag on a porch, or you'll see somebody wearing a Habs hat or Habs t-shirt.
On CNN, yeah.
Sure, or on anything. I mean, this story reached the Times of India. This was a worldwide global story because just about anywhere you live, urban or rural, trains pass through.
Mm.
And it's, you know, it's scary to think about.
Yeah.
It's, it was a terrible weekend. Not easy to think about sports when things like that are going on in the world.
Especially in your neighborhood.
Yeah, well, that's it. And I mean, you know what? It is our neighborhood. It's 215 kilometers from Montreal. That's our neighborhood. They are in our listening zone. People are listening right now in the townships in Lac-Mégantique, and we are with them. And can't imagine what they're going through. You know, just speaking to some journalist friends who've been down there in the last few days, and there's just a shell-shocked feeling.
Yeah.
So our heart goes out to them. And we'll continue to try and be a distraction by talking some sports and having some fun.
Talking about donuts and stadiums and slimy white guys.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Loving it. That's what I show up for,
Mr. Kaufman. That's pretty much as in-depth on CFL talk as you'll get on the Kaufman Show.
And that's as much as I can go because I got to go to work.
That's it for you, AJ.
That's it for me.
All right. Head on down to McLean's Pub and visit our friend Jay Farrar tonight. Otherwise, follow him on Twitter at the Farrar Side.
It was short and sweet. It was a pleasure and an honor to talk to Rusty Staub. I wouldn't have missed it for the world.
The Kaufman Show continues till 8 o'clock. Eric Thomas is with me. We'll be joined by Wendy Thurm, Torben Rolfson. Who else? Mo Khan.
Mo Khan's
in
the house.
That's right. It's going to be a great show tonight on the Kaufman Show. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Dave. See you later.
Double talk and too much time. I guess if I was looking, I would find it's a broken road and it's too long. The summer existence praises. The summer existence praises. The summer lives here and it's praises.
Summer hours. It's the Kaufman Show. Welcome back on TSN 690. Jay Farrar's off to work. I've got Eric Thomas with me. I've got John Kakalakis with me. And on the phone, we have our resident comedian, Torben Rolfson from Vancouver, British Columbia. I know it's just for laughs right now. And frankly, he's on the wrong side of the country because Torben makes us laugh every single week, week in, week out on the Kaufman Show. He is a funny dude. And I like to think of him as our Henny Youngman, the take my wife, please. I take my wife everywhere. She always finds her way home. Ba-dum-ching. And speaking of, Mr. Thomas, you better get that that little drum fill ready for our next guest, because one of the ways that we can tell whether he's hitting or missing on a weekly basis is whether our producer hits the drum fill or not. It's usually Jimmy, and Jimmy has a very select, he's very selective. He's hard on Torben, frankly. I mean, the guy makes me laugh. I laugh a lot. I think the show is constantly peppered with my laugh. And let's see what Torben's got tonight. Hello, Torben.
Good evening, boys. How you doing?
We're great. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. Feels like we haven't talked in about a month.
It honestly, I think we were off the last time we did a show was the day after, it was St. Jean-Baptiste Day Monday, which of course is a huge holiday in British Columbia.
Right.
I know you were off that day and painted your fleur-de-lis and did the run on the seawall.
Absolutely.
But it's great to have you back. And, this is the time of year in this town where comedians descend from all corners of the earth. And, if we can't get you there in person, at least we've got you here by phone.
Excellent. Well, of course, the big news, the hockey world is in shock today. Justin Bieber touched the Stanley Cup. You know, like when your enemy in high school went out with the girl you loved.
Is that how you're looking at this one?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
I'll be honest with you, Torben. Of all the things he did this week, that one kind of bothers me the least.
Yeah.
I mean, he peed in a mop bucket and then swore at a picture of Bill Clinton.
Ilya Kovalchuk, first 30-year-old to retire since the dot-com bubble burst.
I like that one.
I wonder if Roberto Luongo is trying to get the KHL to put an expansion team in Jacksonville.
The Jacksonville, we are not communists?
Right. Canucks fans, they've been extra grouchy the past 2 weeks. They've been giving Mike Gillis worse reviews than the Lone Ranger. The Canucks, the two first-round picks are named Bo and Hunter. If nothing else, they've gained Ted Nugent as a fan.
See, this is what happens. We give you 3 weeks. We give you 3 weeks off, and you're coming at us with all this gold, man. Look at this.
Martin Brodeur, age 40, is going to grace the cover of EA Sports NHL 14, narrowly winning that honor over Chris Chelios and Rocket Richard.
Be nice.
In the NBA, you might have seen some of this offseason stuff. The NBA fined the Lakers $29 million and the Heat $13.3 in luxury tax for last season's roster salaries. All proceeds from the fines will go to dance squad and cheer team plastic surgeries. Speaking of basketball women, Kevin Durant got engaged to WNBA star Monica Wright. John Calipari sent his congratulations and requested first look at the sonogram.
Nice.
Ole Miss shooting guard Marshall Henderson has been suspended indefinitely for violation of team rules. What happened? He didn't accept booster money?
Man, Eric's loving this right now.
And so, 4th of July, of course, you might have seen Joey Chestnut. He broke his own record by scarfing down 69 hot dogs in 10 minutes to win Nathan's annual contest. It's visuals like those that we'll miss now that ESPN is shutting down its 3D division.
Oh, man.
And Canada's national soccer team this week lost 1-0 to Club Med.
I know that Torben is on Twitter at VanGuy, and he always tweets out these great one-liners. And all you did was tweet out the score, and I was laughing. I was rolling on the floor.
Man, Martinique? It's like, did Paul Martin buy a Caribbean island and name it after himself?
He can afford one.
Yeah. And, of course, other seasons on the off-season, the NFL's off-season has seen more arrests than a season of Cops. Did you see the Patriots Pro Shop is offering a free exchange? You can trade a number 81 Hernandez jersey and receive a number 85 Ocho Cinco jersey. And finally, that Miami Clinic controversy churns on. Whichever league has the most players suspended in the Biogenesis scandal will host WrestleMania 30.
Oh, God. Oh, God. We're going to be getting into that scandal in depth with Wendy Thurm in a few minutes, who was a lawyer in her previous life and is now a baseball writer. I think that we're going to discuss the constitutionality of all of this that's going on right now.
I look forward to the discussion.
Torben, thank you so much for your time. Great stuff as always, and we'll catch up next. Actually, we're not on next week live, so we'll catch up in a couple of weeks.
Okay, have a great night, you guys.
Thank you, Torben. Torben Rolfson, our resident comedian live from Vancouver like he is every week. Follow him on Twitter at VanGuy. This is The Kaufman Show. Here's the Bedini Band, Big Men Go Fast on the Water. We'll be back with Wendy Thurm after the sports update on TSN 690.
See his head rising over the tide. Two dark fish rides a devil astride. Big men go fast on the water.
Big men go fast on the water.
We are back. Hour two of the Kaufman Show, our new summer hours. It's going to be fun to walk out of here tonight, Eric, and still see the sun. I brought my sunglasses to studio, and there's no chance that I'm going to forget them like I normally do.
Yeah, I usually turn the light on outside when I leave the house, and I knew that I'd be back early enough so that I didn't have to do that tonight.
Are you on tonight as well?
No. No, okay. I will be back, though, tomorrow night, 6 to 8, right here on TSN 690.
Great. Of course, Mo Khan is coming up a little later on tonight, and he'll be with us in about 40 minutes' time to give us a little preview. He's got a very big American radio host from XM Satellite on tonight to talk about the Montreal Expos. It's funny how we sometimes go far afield to talk about things that are close to home. But tonight we're going far afield. We're going all the way to the beautiful city of San Francisco, where I promise I will not ask our next guest about her baseball team. Instead, we'll get into the nitty-gritty of this really weird scandal that's unfolding. And our next guest, her name is Wendy Thurm. She contributes at Getting Blanked, at the Bay Area Sports Guy. She's written for ESPN and Sports on Earth and Baseball Nation, Wall Street Journal. She was a practicing lawyer for almost two decades. And thought better of it and decided to become a baseball writer. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again, we are all better for it. Follow her on Twitter at Hanging Sliders, and let's welcome Wendy Thurm to the Kaufman Show. Welcome back, Wendy.
Thanks, Dave. I'd love to lead in music, so thank you for that.
Hey, you can't
that
go wrong with
very,
Neil Young, right?
Yeah, that was very San Francisco of you. I appreciate that.
Well, that's, I guess, yeah, Laurel Canyon, right? That's that whole, that's where I think where he wrote a lot of his stuff. I don't know how far that is from San Fran, but.
Yeah, he actually lives not too far from San Francisco now and has a presence in the Bay Area. So he's definitely a compadre here in the Bay Area.
Well, good, because then it ticks two boxes, because I've been playing all Canadian music tonight. But if I can make you happy by playing something as well, then that works. Wendy, I'm really happy that you're able to come on tonight. You wrote an article that appeared on FanGraphs, one of the premier baseball sites today. And, you know, you're looking at this this biogenesis story from a different angle than most baseball writers I know. And I think it's because of your career in law. Can we get into this? Can we discuss exactly what is going on right now with Major League Baseball?
Absolutely. The story I wrote today was trying to get at a piece that had appeared on ESPN, I think late on Tuesday, which indicated, according to the sources speaking to ESPN, that Major League Baseball is preparing to suspend a whole bunch of players, but in particular is looking at 100-game suspensions for both Alex Rodriguez and Ryan Braun. It would be a 50-game suspension for a, first-time violation of the performance-enhancing substance policy that's part of the collective bargaining agreement between the players and the league, and more specifically, there's something called the Joint Drug Policy and Program, which lays out all of the substances that are banned, lays out what constitutes a violation, and lays out what the punishment is for a first, second, and third violation. The second 50 games, according to the ESPN report, would arise from what's being described as either Braun and Rodriguez is lying to Major League Baseball, or their failure to cooperate with the league's investigation. The story included a report that Braun met with investigators and, in fact, refused to answer any questions. So one of the things I was positing in the piece I wrote today was, well, if Ryan Braun didn't answer any questions, then how could he be held to have lied to the league? You know, what could they be trying to get at? And so, you know, those were the set of questions that, you know, that I was trying to get at.
Now, sure. Wendy, this seems preposterous to me that I don't understand how this holds up in a court of law. And I guess is the answer that it doesn't have to.
Yeah, there will not be either a state court or a federal court. I mean, most likely. I mean, there is a scenario in which all of this biogenesis, you know, mess, the investigation, the ensuing suspensions, the appeals of the suspensions, et cetera, could end up before most likely a U.S. federal judge. But all of this is taking place subject to the collective bargaining agreement between the players' union and the league. And the case law, including the recent case law from the U.S. Supreme Court, says that when you have a collective bargaining agreement and when disputes are subject to arbitration and there's been a fair, you know, adjudication of an appeal or a grievance before an arbitrator, it's near impossible to have a court step in and overturn that because the courts like to defer to what the parties collectively bargained before the dispute arose.
Do you see this? Do you see this being a referendum on Bud Selig's power?
Well, let me tell your listeners, you know, what it is that I mentioned in the article that I do think, you know, would be an abuse of his power. The question I asked in the title of the story was, is Bud Selig preparing to use what I call the nuclear option, which is, you know, a kind of a term of art now, largely used in kind of, you know, political commentary in the United States to describe, you know, a very fractured form of government between Congress and the president when through their variety of procedural rules and, you know, in the United States Senate where one party can kind of pull the rules out from under everybody, and that's called the nuclear option. And it's kind of taken on its, you know, its own meaning, you know.
Right.
So what I was pondering in the story was I went and looked again at the collective bargaining agreement, which, you know, these things are very, very dense documents, both the agreement and the joint drug program and policy and program, which is an addendum, but in and of itself is, you know, 100 pages of legalese. And there is a provision in the collective bargaining agreement, there are several provisions that talk about when the commissioner can suspend a player for what's called just cause. So there may be, put aside the drug issues, put aside the banned substance issues, there are a variety of things that can happen that, you know, conduct by a player that might lead a commissioner to form the opinion that there's just cause to suspend a player for, you know, a week or a month or something. This happened with beanball wars between, you know, teams when someone gets thrown, you know, a ball gets thrown at someone's head, there's a brawl. It happens when there are disputes between players and umpires, and a player, you know, maybe goes a little bit nuts in the face of an umpire.
Right. Goes all Delman Young or something, you know?
Right. The just cause provision, you know, is often used to suspend players. And then there are a whole variety of other grievances which are kind of spelled out in the collective bargaining agreement. So, for example, a grievance having to do with a player being put or not put on the disabled list, a grievance about a player being, you know, sent to the minors or on waivers, or, you know, there's a whole variety of things. And there's a whole process in the collective bargaining agreement for how players try to resolve those disputes called grievances. And, you know, there's different processes that are used. Now, there is language in the collective bargaining agreement that says when the commissioner is acting to protect the best interests of baseball, that is a decision that is his and his alone, and is not, basically, is an exemption from the entire grievance process. So I was looking at that language, and I was wondering to myself, you know, could Bud Selig be preparing to use, you know, the just cause provision to say Alex Rodriguez and Ryan Braun, maybe they weren't lying, but they failed to cooperate when they said, you know, they have nothing to hide or whatever it is, you know, that each of them has said through their agents and their spokespeople. You know, they've thwarted our investigation. There's a hue and cry in the public to punish these players. And so there's just cause, you know, to suspend them for failing to cooperate. And I'm going to invoke my best interest of baseball power to make that suspension basically unappealable.
Which circumvents, I mean, like these grievances that you mentioned, Wendy, I would imagine, I'm not very familiar with it, but if you've ever been in a union or ever been associated with a union, I'd imagine that these are things that you hear about. It's just on a much larger scale for Major League Baseball.
Exactly. And there are different, the process, as I was mentioning before, there's different kinds of grievances that can come up. When a player is suspended, for example, for, you know, a run-in with an umpire, it's a very quick appeal process, right? Mm-hmm. And we hear about this all the time, right? There's been a beanball war. There was a brawl. This has happened, for example, I think, with Eric Hinsky of the Diamondbacks.
Right, who didn't throw a punch and got a 5-game suspension.
Right. I think 7 games or whatever it was.
Right.
And then he appealed. And that's a very quick process. And I think that process doesn't even go to an arbitrator. It goes up to kind of another level within the executive office of Major League Baseball. They look at it again. They decide and they make a final ruling. And there's no, quote, neutral arbitrator that gets involved with that. And because you want it to be very quick.
Right.
Right. So you don't want a player kind of sitting out there. Grievances that have to do more with salary. I wrote a piece for Fangraphs a couple of weeks ago about a grievance that an AIDS reliever had filed because he felt like he was improperly put on the disabled list instead of being sent to the minors instead of being put on the disabled list.
Right.
And that, because he was a marginal player, that affected, you know, whether he was drawing a major league salary or a minor league salary, which at his level, you know, was considerable. So
sure.
There's all kinds of processes. Now, the drug treatment program and policy lays out a very, very specific appeal process for when a player is suspended for a violation. We saw this process play out when Ryan Braun reportedly tested positive for testosterone. That was leaked, you know, then it kind of became known that he was appealing, and then we know the arbitrator found that
there was reasonable doubt.
The urine sample had not followed all of the rules, and there was some question as to whether or not the sample, not that it was tainted with, but whether it had met the standards that had been laid out in the protocol.
Right, because the guy left it in his fridge for over the weekend.
Right. So let's put aside A-Rod and Ryan Braun. Let's just pick, Nelson Cruz is a name that's been out there.
Well, actually, if you wouldn't mind, can we pick Melky Cabrera? Because I find that to be a really fascinating,
yes,
especially
absolutely.
Considering he forged a website last year.
Yes, we can pick Melky Cabrera. Let's talk first about kind of the double jeopardy question with him. So, you know, his name has come up with respect to Biogenesis. You know, what the league has to figure out is whether there is evidence that they can rely on to prove that he possessed or used performance-enhancing drugs that's separate and apart from his use and possession for which he's already been punished. Because the collective bargaining agreement and the drug policy makes very clear that a player cannot be penalized twice for the same offense. So, if Melky Cabrera, was suspended last year for testosterone or whatever it was that he received from Biogenesis, and you know the dates match up, and MLB can't prove kind of a separate violation, they should not be able to suspend him again, essentially for the same use.
But Bud Selig can step in and say that for the betterment of the game, this is what I'm deciding. Am I gathering that? Like, is that accurate?
I don't know. I mean, what I'm positing is I think there's a question as to the breadth of the commissioner's power.
Okay.
And I don't know whether between Major League Baseball and the Players Union, there's anyone who thinks that the commissioner has a legal right to or should invoke the best interest of baseball to kind of remove this from the arbitral process. I'm just reading words in an agreement.
Right.
And I'm reading the news stories and I'm kind of taking a step back and looking at all of the things that Major League Baseball has kind of done here, some of which people would argue, are a bit heavy-handed, and wondering kind of, how far is he willing to go? And I don't know that answer. I don't know the answer to that. And so the language says what it says in the agreement, but whether or not the agreement needs to be read, in light of the joint drug policy, that in fact that kind of limits the commissioner to the punishments that are actually set forth in that. He can't just go to the best interest of baseball and just start willy-nilly kind of doing what he wants. That's separate and apart from what had already, been agreed to.
We've got a few minutes left with Wendy Thurm from Fangraphs.com. You can follow her on Twitter at Hanging Sliders. Wendy, there's been such peace, really pretty much since 94, or at least since Chief Justice Sotomayor settled everything in the spring of 95. Do you think that this is something that could lead to labored, I don't know what the right word is, but some sort of a disruption in this 15-year peace in Major League Baseball between the PA and the MLB?
That's a pretty open-ended question. I think the answer is, it could. The union is in a difficult position, and there's been a lot written about this. I mean, I haven't talked to folks at the union, but I trust a number of sources that I've read of people who've talked to folks at the union who suggest they're in a tough position because there are players, many players who are kind of they're clean now, and they're kind of tired of these stories every single year, and they agree to a strict testing protocol, and they just want this done. I mean, that for the most, there will be people that will test positive, but it won't be this, it's still 20, 30, 40 players in the game. On the other hand, the union has an obligation, given its fiduciary duties to its players, to defend the players and to keep the employer, in this case, the clubs and Major League Baseball, from overreaching. So, the union is in a tough spot. We saw the union president, Michael Weiner, issue a statement today that basically said, all this stuff that's now come out in the open and these leaks is really undermining the process. And you can understand that he doesn't want, Weiner doesn't want all of the machinations and decisions that the union has to make in terms of defending players, but also coming out strong in support of the testing program to be played out publicly because, it's a very difficult position for them. On the other hand, I'm not entirely sure why it's really in the league's interest to be leaking so much because they still have to deal, with the neutral arbitrator. So, being very aggressive and saber-rattling about, the number of players and it's going to come down and whatnot, they don't want to get their hands slapped again like they did with Braun.
Right.
My best guess is that the leaks are coming from the league side. It's just a guess, and it's about putting pressure on players to come to agreements, to basically plea bargain down, which is the term you would use in the criminal process, but to come to an agreement. And let me just point your listeners to, because you mentioned Melky Cabrera, Craig Calcaterra at Hardball Talk had a piece up today, and I mentioned his piece from yesterday where he was kind of positing, well, how could you punish Braun, for example, for lying when Melky Cabrera wasn't punished for lying last year? And he, Calcaterra, talked to some sources in Major League Baseball who suggested that, in fact, the league planned to punish Melky for lying and that the suspension – and his agreement to give up the batting title and a few other things was part of an agreement where they would not give him more than 50 games and basically have it extend into this season. But, you know, he had to give up certain things. So that,
lucky him, eh?
So, you know, and that it put him in a position to be able to basically sign a contract with the Blue Jays where he could start from the beginning of the season.
Right, and make $16 million, which if any of these guys who are being suspended right now, it could flow into next season. If any of them are free agents, it could seriously affect their professional futures, which, again,
absolutely.
I don't know if that's necessarily my problem. I would rather see the game clean. But, you know, I'll tell you, Wendy, just on a totally unrelated issue, it blows my mind that we can see someone like Ryan Braun get 100 games, 50 of them for lying, and Miguel Cabrera can get DUIs till the cows come home and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on that, David. It's, you know, the way the league has handled that, well, it's not the league. I mean, again, my understanding is that the league has wanted to get tough on that and that the union just, you know, hasn't been willing to agree to it and it hasn't, you know, these things are bargained for. And, you know, the league had their, whatever, top 15 points that they, you know, were important to them when they did the most recent negotiations. The union had theirs. And, you know, I mean, the National Football League has, I think, a much, you know, they have a more vigorous program when it comes to suspending players with respect to DUI. Of course, they also have a bunch of players, you know, engaging, you know, I mean, they have almost, you know, they have a performance-enhancing drugs policy with almost no teeth. So, you know, every league, in every league, it's the union and the league that have to kind of negotiate out what are those, you know, things that are important. But I agree with you. The notion that, you know, whether it's Miguel Cabrera or anybody else or you know, Brett Myers and, you know, domestic violence, I mean, whatever it is.
Yeah, Chad Godin feeling up a woman in a Las Vegas hospital.
Exactly, Chad. I mean, you know, how, you know, why it is the best interest of baseball clause, like, wouldn't be invoked for a player who's, for example, like a repeat domestic violence offender or a repeat, you know, drunk driver, that tarnishes the game, I think, in my view.
Well, it's because Biogenesis doesn't sponsor and have signs on the outfield walls and Budweiser does.
Yeah. No, that's... That's true.
And the other thing is that it speaks to the power of this union that was non-existent 45 years ago. And, you know, these players were I mean, if you look at what was done in the late 60s and what Marvin Miller did to give these guys a voice and to give these guys rights. And unfortunately, it's a push and pull. And sometimes it's too much. I mean, look, the MLB, I guess you need a union as strong as the MLBPA to go up against the behemoth that is MLB.
You know, I agree. I mean, a lot of people think the union has become too acquiescent. That, you know, in the most recent negotiations, you know, for example, the union, you know, kind of rolled over on, you know, the stuff with respect to the, not rolled over. Let's put it this way. The union was representing its current members and kind of agreed to the stuff, you know, limiting the draft bonus pools and, you know, limiting the amount of money that could be spent on international signings because, of course, they represent current members, not potential future members of the union. And so, and that, you know, of course, many of the owners, not all of the owners, but at least the majority of the owners, you know, they wanted cost controls. And, you know, a lot of people think that the union, you know, kind of took a short-sighted view about that. That it isn't in the best interest of the game overall. So, you know, a little tension between those two sides, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. It, you know, well, kind of how the union itself has to manage its kind of competing interests here and then how it does that at the same time, it kind of stands up to, you know, I think what many see as being kind of the excesses of this Biogenesis investigation. I mean, clearly the league has a right to and should have investigated it. Whether they should have pursued it in the way they pursued it, you know, we can debate that. So,
And I look forward to debating it down the road with you. Wendy,
exactly.
Thanks so much for your time tonight. It was a fascinating conversation. I learned a ton, as I always do, when I read your stuff or I listen to you. And follow her on Twitter, ladies and gentlemen. She's at Hanging Sliders. Thanks again, Wendy.
Thanks, Dave. Take care.
Speak to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
There she goes. Wendy Thurm. Our thanks to Wendy. And the Kaufman Show continues on TSN 690.
I want to drink too much. You look Polish. Got a wicked sense of humor. Feel dizzy. And I want your touch. Let's get tipsy and start a rumor.
I'm punching in. I'm punching out. It's the Kaufman Show. Not too much time left, which is weird, man. I'm looking out this window, and I feel like we should be on until, well, an ungodly hour. 514-790-1690. We'll take your calls to wrap up the show. 1-866-896-2546 if you're out of town. We are owned by Bell Media, right, Eric?
True story.
Okay, so Bell, like, telephones, right?
Yeah.
All right, so, yeah, it should be on our dime, not yours, if you're out of town. Let's go to the phones. We've got Travis in Asheville, North Carolina. Hello, Travis, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Dave.
How are you, sir?
I can't complain. I hate to be the contrarian, but I would like to be the steroid defender for the night.
The steroid defender.
Yeah.
The drugs are good guy.
Yeah.
The everybody's on Prozac anyway. So what's the difference?
Well, not so much Prozac. I mean, I
okay, everybody's high? Or what are you trying to say here?
Well, I just don't think that it's actually an issue.
Why not?
I think the arguments against it are made by a bunch of the same old crotchety BBWAA members that always like to be loud during the off-season. And the arguments used against it are valid in terms of health arguments, are valid if you're a woman or if you're an adolescent male. If you're a healthy adult male, the health arguments have never been quite as severe as they claim to be.
Well, what about the rage and the testicle shrinkage?
Well, that's not really my problem, is it?
Well, no, but if, you know, little Timmy wants to grow up and play baseball like Jose Canseco, and then you find out that Jose Canseco can't get it up anymore, I don't know if that's the case, but you know what I mean, then there are these things that little Timmy can't be thinking about at 9 years old, and he just, you know... Kids or chicks or whatever it is, they dig the long ball, right?
It's true. But
so I don't know how to combat that side of it. And, you know, I had a conversation with an athlete this week who, are you on? I can hear myself right now, Eric. What's going on here? Travis, can you turn off your radio? I've never heard you turn it on, so I think there's probably some mistake there. Why don't you hang up and call back? Okay, perfect. Well, Travis, we'll be right back on the line with Travis. But this is my issue with this, Eric. I have a lot of trouble saying, look, all of America is on pharmaceuticals. Everybody's on something. Everybody takes something for something to make themselves better at everything. And you see it with kids with Ritalin. You see it across the board. I don't think it makes it right. And like I was saying there to Travis, I had a conversation with an athlete this week who said to me that he thinks it's important that athletes can still be role models. And I find it really hard to call an athlete a role model if they're using drugs. That's pretty much it. I have no problem apparently calling a rock and roll star a model if they're using drugs, but we'll keep the divisions there. Is that Travis again? Welcome back, Travis.
Thank you.
We missed you.
I'm just
So what's where were we? Sorry.
Oh, I was just complaining about the BBWAA and being
the crotchety old baseball voters. You said, right?
Yeah, Dan Shaughnessy.
Okay.
The name of that, but you know, I admit that I liked the game. I liked the 98-99. I didn't like McGuire hitting, what was it, 6 home runs against the Expos in that one series.
With Shane Andrews tapping him on the ass as he rounds third base?
Yeah, I didn't like that so much. But the game, in my opinion, had a certain excitement back then.
Well, you share that opinion with another Southerner.
Do I?
Yeah, John Rocker was quoted as saying that baseball was much better back then.
Oh, yeah.
So I think this is the first time that you've ever had something in common with John Rocker. Congratulations. You bring. I love your discourse on Twitter as the polemicist, and I'm sorry.
I think if John Rocker called, you'd probably not hang up on him.
No, I would love to follow up Jeff Perlman's article from all those years ago about taking the 6 train out to Shea.
Yeah.
You know, I believe he said something about getting AIDS from sitting on a seat. He said some real ridiculous stuff that, you know, it's always my honor and my pleasure to be able to call people out on BS. And, it's always great to be able to do that on TSN radio.
And I don't think he was suspended for those comments, was he?
No, I don't think it's amazing how that works. And that's a good tie into our conversation with Wendy from before. You know, you can drive as drunk as you want. You can beat your wife. You just can't put a needle in your arm.
Yeah.
Or you can put a needle in your arm. It can be heroin as long as they don't catch you. But it can't be some drug I can't pronounce. And I don't think it should be. I understand your defense of it. But I don't think, and you know, somebody who I respect, one of my mentors in this industry, Dave Zirin at Edges Sports, he's discussed that at length as well. How maybe we should just regulate, which is the answer for a lot of things. I mean, we're seeing the regulation slowly of marijuana right now in the United States.
Here's my only problem with the no drugs argument.
Uh-huh.
If it could have saved one more career, if we could still be watching Vladimir Guerrero play this year, if we could be watching a lot of players, I mean, what did Koufax say when he quit? I don't know if cortisol is good for me or not, you know? If you can salvage one more year of a player that is so joyful to watch in the field, I don't have a problem with it.
Well, tell that to the family of Ken Caminiti.
True.
There's an example of a guy who overabused steroids, won the most valuable player in the National League, and not long after died. And, you know, he opened the floodgates. He was the one that spoke to Sports Illustrated and said, the game is dirty, we need to clean it up. I'm an example of it. And not long after that, he was gone. So I always go back to that as my example. We can't clean baseball up. Look what it did to Ken Caminiti. Or we have to clean baseball up. Look what it did to Ken Caminiti.
Yeah, and the thing is, though, is that you're not wrong. And that makes it very hard to come up with a cogent argument against it.
Well, and I mean, but there are arguments against it. And again, you have to look long and hard to find an aspect of North American society where somebody isn't on something.
Exactly.
You know, the show started tonight, and I went down to the Second Cup on the corner, went and visited my buddy John, and ordered a large coffee with an extra shot in it.
Precisely.
I wanted, and you know what? John Wetland, great Expos closer, used to drink cup after cup after cup of coffee before he took the mound, because the caffeine would give him a boost. And I mean, you know what? I've been up since 8 o'clock this morning. I've been working all day, and I feel something from that coffee for sure. I guess for some people, it's steroids. For some people, it's cocaine. For some people, it's alcohol. For some people, it's coffee. For some people, it's cigarettes. For some people, it's Prozac. Everybody's on something. It doesn't mean that the guy who, again, I hate the little Timmy argument because it sounds so cheap, but man, I was that little kid. Won't somebody think of the children? Like Maude Flanders, but
I thought they closed that place down.
Sex cauldron? What are you talking about?
I guess my problem at the core is, when you got these guys trying to really get Braun and get Melky Cabrera, but they have no problem sitting down next to Jeffrey Loria. I guess that's what gets me.
Well, it's different. Corporate greed and I mean, hey, you know what? If there are probably a lot of dads out there that wish their kids could grow up to be as successful as Jeffrey Loria.
Or that they could...
All the little guys along the way be damned. But there is an aspect of society that thinks that that is great. I'm not one of them.
Or that they could watch their kid's first game in a place called Enron Field.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting point as well. Well, you know, if you live in Canada, you can go to Tim Hortons Stadium in Hamilton and watch the Tie Cats play.
Well, I severely doubt that we'll be associating Enron and Tim Hortons anytime soon.
No, Tim Hortons will never go the route of Enron. It's just not possible. Unless Tim Hortons opens a bank, I don't think that's going to happen. Travis, thanks so much for the call, man.
Cheers. You have a good one.
You too. Let's go to Ron in Montreal North. Ron, who always agrees with my co-host, Jay Farrar. Guess what, Ron? Jay's not here, so you better agree with me.
I know that. It was so hot.
How hot was it?
I actually thought yesterday was Thursday. That's why I put in that tweet when.
Yeah, I saw the when, and
I thought yesterday was Thursday.
I figured I'd just let it be. I didn't want to. You know, I respect
you're
you,
not
Ron.
On there,
and
I'm
exactly
what's going on. Designer children.
Well, welcome to the show.
Designer children.
Designer children on designer drugs wearing designer jeans.
No. Designer children.
Design our children.
Yes. Okay. No, designer children. In other words, DNA designed children. Okay.
Okay. Like that the boys from Brazil.
That you're not going to be able to stop. That's a fact. That's a fact right now.
Well, what do you mean? Do you mean like I want to have a boy, so I'm going to genetically engineer it so that I have a boy?
No. I mean, I'm talking, I want a ball player, okay?
Yeah, that's why I'm marrying a 6-foot-tall left-handed woman.
No, you don't have to.
Oh, no? Oh, awesome.
Because they can actually go into the DNA, okay?
And manipulate it.
And manipulate it. So that even if both of you are 5'8", 5'6", maybe.
What if she's 5'2" and really awesome?
Doesn't make
and walks like she's taller than 5'2".
You could still get a child, okay, that's going to be 6'4",
okay,
weigh over 200 pounds, you know, have all the right motor skills.
But I want him to be left-handed, Ron. Like, I'm so serious about this. If I could have a left-handed kid, that kid's going to make the majors. I'm just going to force that kid to throw pitches all day, all night, learn a curveball.
This science exists as we speak now.
Scary,
isn't
it?
I'm serious. I'm not joking.
I know.
As we exist right now. And you can buy it in the United States if you have enough money. Okay?
Well, you can buy anything in the States if you have enough money.
This is no joke. Because you're not going to be able to, I mean, how are you going to separate the cheaters from the whatevers?
This is the issue, Ron.
When you come down to that, you know, like, how are you going to do it?
Prayer? Prayer, I think, is the answer, right? Because I think that genetic engineering and prayer. Genetic engineering and prayer go hand in hand, right? I'd imagine that most of these scientists are very religious people, right?
No.
I'm
these
teasing,
people will
Ron.
Do anything for money.
I'm teasing, Ron.
They will do anything for money. And the people who have the money will do anything to get what they want.
What else is new, man? Ron, thanks for the call. Hope you like the early time slot, and we'll catch you in a couple of weeks.
Explain to me how to catch your...
How to catch my what?
Your podcast.
TheKaufmanShow.podbean.
Kaufman and Spry.
That is another show that we don't discuss on TSN.
No,
but if you want to send me a tweet, I'll be more than happy to fill you in on all the sexy little details. Thank you, Ron. Play some Sam Roberts before I get into trouble, Eric. It's the Kaufman Show. We'll be back with Mo Khan. going out on a double shot of Plaskett on the Kaufman Show. We got a few minutes left tonight, and we're going to spend them with our friend Mo Khan. Follow him on Twitter at Mo Khan, K-H-A-N, and then the number 19. Mo is the host of The Midnight Snack. He is a co-host on Game Points with Matthew Ross. He is the expert on CFL football on the station. And he's an all-around awesome dude. Hello, Mo.
Thank you for the kind words, Dave. How you been, sir?
I'm great. How are you, man?
Not bad. You know what? Your last call, talking about genetics, right?
Yeah.
My father's 5'4", 135 pounds.
And you're a beast, so there you go.
Yeah, so you know what? Sometimes you can skip a generation where I didn't get the short genes from my dad's side, but yet end up 6'4", so go figure.
It's amazing how many friends I've had the conversation with about wanting to have a left-handed pitcher as a son.
Oh, you're money. Your money if you get the lefty going on.
That's so funny. Mo, before we tee up Midnight Snack tonight, which I'm really looking forward to, you got a great lineup going on. I want your thoughts on Yasuel Puig not making the All-Star game.
You know, it's funny. You look at that. Freddie Freeman's well-deserved for the NL. I think he definitely deserved to get in. I think with Yasuel Puig right now, again, about, what, 5 weeks of play that he has had so far up till now, he's definitely showing the excitement that is needed for baseball. But also remember, though, the All-Star game is all about excitement, flair, and superstar for the next generation here. Last year, we had Mike Trout being there with Bryce Harper, and these guys become the next generation of athletes here. But a guy like Puig can definitely attract another generation of baseball fans to come watch this game here. I think he will get in some shape or form here. So you know how it is, Dave. When we approach All-Star Weekend or All-Star Week, that is, someone pulls up with a lame paper-cut finger and says, I can't play. So that means Puig's going to get in somehow, somewhere. But I think he will get in, unfortunately not through the fan vote, which went to Freddie Freeman, but he's well-deserved, though, for Freeman to get in.
Proving once again that the fans are too stupid to know what's a good thing. Actually, Atlanta Braves Nation mobilized, and they went hardcore on social media today. I haven't been that annoyed with the Braves, Mo, in, since Maddux and Smoltz and Glavin and Merker and Avery were pitching for them. Mo, you've got a huge show tonight. We've got a couple of minutes left for you to tell us about it.
Well, Diego Costa, who is one of the biggest premier radio broadcasters on SiriusXM, will be on with us. He's going to talk Montreal Expos baseball. For those who have the chance to listen to him on SiriusXM Channel 86, he always talks about the Expos and why it should be back in the city of Montreal. He adores the city, loves the history of the Expos. A huge fan of Rusty Staub here, Dave Kaufman. So I definitely look forward to having him on. And I'll tell you this little nugget here. He plays the Expos theme song that Annika Slade did produce a couple years ago. So he is definitely a big Expos supporter, and we're going to get his perspective from the American guy on why they should be back in Montreal.
Awesome, Mo. I will be listening. I can't wait. And maybe I'll even call in.
Absolutely. You know what? If you want to call in during the segment, please do so. I'm sure he would love to hear more Expos baseball fans like yourself to come on and talk about some baseball.
We're running out of time, but I want to thank all our guests, Mr. Mo Khan, Torben Rolfson, Wendy Thurm, and Le Grand Orange, Rusty Staub. Thanks, Mo.
That's all. Take care, pal.
Stayed out too late, had a little too much to drink, walk home across the bridge when the marquee shut down. There's a reason that I love this town. Nobody cares how much money you have. If you've got enough to get in a cab, there'll be drinks on the house. If your house burns down, there's a reason that I love this town. I saw your band in the early days. We all hold a grudge anyway. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. It's the reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. If
You saw my band in the early days, and you understand why we moved away. You hold a grudge anyway, because it's fun. Davy and me, face down in our suit, some French restaurant, I saw Riviera de Loup. Last night at a tour, we burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
That's another Kaufman Show in the books. For Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman. We'll see you next week.
I don't know. What'd that sound like?